Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're really digging into something cool, the future of actually moving around on other planets.
Yeah, beyond just getting there.
Exactly. We're looking at robotic exploration, specifically the challenges of sandy, rocky terrain, and, well, maybe wheels aren't always the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Our guide is a paper from 2023 by Chen Lai and Kevin Lewis called The Need for and Feasibility of Alternative Ground Robots to Traverse Sandy and Rocky Extraterrestrial Terrain.
It's a great piece.
So, our mission today is to understand, you know, why our trusty wheeled rovers sometimes struggle, and how robots inspired by nature might be the key to exploring those really tricky but scientifically amazing spots on other worlds.
That's right. For decades, really, the image has been wheels on Mars, wheels on the moon, and they've been incredibly successful. You think of Opportunity, what was it, over 45 kilometers on Mars?
Incredible distance.
And even going way back, Lunokhod 2 did nearly 40 kilometers on the moon. These are serious achievements.
Absolutely pioneers.
Yeah.
But as this paper points out, those very missions, their success, also kind of showed us the limits of wheels.
Exactly. The limitations can really stop us from getting to the most interesting geology, the places we really want to see up close.
So what are some of those big limitations? Getting stuck seems like a major one.
Oh, definitely. Spirit is the classic example, right?
Yeah.
It got permanently stuck. And the tricky part was it looked like solid ground.
Right.
But it turned out to be this incredibly loose soil, high in ferric sulfate, basically super fine powder hidden under a thin crust, an invisible trap.
And didn't Spirit already have a wheel problem by then, too?
It did, yeah, which just made things harder. It couldn't power its way out as easily.
An Opportunity, even though it went so far, it got stuck, too, didn't it, in that sand ripple?
That's right, Purgatory Ripple. It wasn't even that big, maybe 30 centimeters high, but the sand was just so loose.
Yeah.
It took them weeks to get it out, and afterwards, you bet they avoided ripples like that. It really changed how they planned traverses.
So it's not just about big rocks. It's the ground itself betraying the wheels.
Precisely. Loose soil, soft sand. These materials just don't behave predictably under a wheel, especially a heavy robotic one.
Okay, what about damage? I've seen those pictures of Curiosity's wheels.
Yeah, that's the other big issue. Mars has these sharp, angular rocks, and Curiosity's wheels are made of aluminum, quite thin.
And they just get punctured.
Punctured, torn, significant damage over time. You can see holes and rips in the photos.
So how do they even keep it moving? That sounds mission critical.
Well, the JPL engineers are brilliant. They came up with a couple of strategies. One is traction control.
Like in a car?
Sort of, yeah. It adjusts the speed of the individual wheels. If one starts slipping on loose ground or hits a sharp edge, they can slow it down, reduce the force, hopefully prevent a puncture.
Clever.
And the other thing was, well, they just had to change where Curiosity drives. Stick to smoother paths. Avoid the really rocky areas where possible.
Which means maybe missing out on some interesting spots to protect the wheels.
Potentially, yes. It's a trade-off. And it wasn't just rocks. Curiosity also sank pretty deep in soft sand once in a place called Hidden Valley.
Oh, right.
They'd actually thought about driving over some sand ripples there, thinking it might be gentler than rocks. But then the sinking happened and they decided, nope. Too risky, stick to firmer ground.
So you're constantly balancing the risk of getting stuck in sand against the risk of damaging the wheels on rocks.
Exactly. And this is the core problem. The places scientists often want to study most closely are inherently hazardous for wheels.
Like what kind of places?
Think eroding cliffs, where you might see ancient layers exposed. Those often have piles of jagged rocks at the bottom, sometimes bigger than the rover.
Okay.
Yeah. Or steep slopes, maybe 35 degrees or more, covered in loose stuff that could slide. And wind-blown sand dunes or drifts. The paper has figures showing just how messy this terrain can be.
So the best science is hiding in the danger zones.
Pretty much. It's a tough situation. Orbital images help us plan routes now much better than before. We can spot some hazards.
But not everything, like that hidden weak soil that got Spirit.
Exactly. You can't see everything from orbit. So these aren't just engineering headaches. They directly limit the science we can do.
Okay, so the current approach is basically map it and avoid it.
Largely, yes. The rovers use their cameras, lasers sometimes, to build a 3D map. They classify terrain rock, sand, slope, and the software plans a path to avoid the risky bits.
That sounds sensible.
And it works well when the obstacles are, you know, spread out, and when the interaction between the wheel and the ground is well understood. Like driving a car on pavement, We know how tires work.
But Mars isn't pavement.
Not even close. When you have sand that can swallow a wheel, or terrain just choked with rocks or steep, loose slopes, avoidance often means just writing off entire areas.
Even if they're prime scientific targets.
Even then, the risk is just too high for these expensive, one-of-a-kind machines.
Which leads us perfectly into the really exciting part of this paper. Alternatives. What comes after wheels?
Right. The authors explore a whole zoo of possibilities beyond just flying drones or submersibles. Think tracked vehicles like tanks,
right,
multi-legged robots, walkers, even humanoid bipeds. And then stranger things. Robots that move like screws, snake-like robots, tensegrity robots made of rods and cables.
Wow, quite a range.
Robots that can climb, jump, even rappel down cliffs. The big challenge, though, isn't just making one type work. It's achieving what they call multimodal locomotion.
Meaning
the robot can switch between different ways of moving, depending on the terrain. Walk here, crawl there, climb over this. That's the key to versatility.
And the inspiration for a lot of this.
Yeah.
It comes from nature, right?
Absolutely. The paper really emphasizes this. Animals with legs, insects, mammals, they are just masters of complex terrain.
Yeah, you watch a goat on a mountainside?
Exactly. Or an ant navigating leaf litter. They handle stuff that would completely stop a rover. Legs just have inherent advantages over wheels in those situations.
So how do we translate that animal skill into robots? Hasn't legged robotics been around a while?
It has. A lot of the early work and even some very impressive current robots like Boston Dynamics makes.
Those always go viral.
Right. They focused on walking and running efficiently on relatively flat, hard ground. We've got a good handle on the physics for that.
But the tricky Martian terrain, the sand and rocks.
That's where newer breakthroughs are happening. The paper points to recent work understanding how legs interact with granular stuff like sand or loose soil.
Okay.
There are specific ways to move legs to get grip, avoid sinking too much. That knowledge is now feeding into designing legged robots specifically for those kinds of surfaces.
And what about bigger obstacles? Not just sand, but climbing over rocks and stuff.
That's another fascinating area. The Pterodynamics Lab at Johns Hopkins, mentioned in the paper, they study how insects and snakes and their robot equivalents deal with really complex 3D terrain.
Pterodynamics, I like that. Physics of moving on Earth.
Exactly. They look at how these creatures use locomotor transitions.
Transitions, like shifting gears.
Kind of. It's about changing how they move. Switching from, say, walking to climbing or scrambling to get over different kinds of obstacles, like gaps, big bumps, cluttered rocks.
The paper uses this phrase, stochastic yet stereotyped locomotor modes. Can you unpack that a bit?
Sure. Think about walking on uneven ground. You adjust automatically, right? Animals have evolved stable, repeatable ways of moving for different conditions. Those are the stereotyped modes, walking, trotting, climbing.
Okay.
Stochastic just means there's some randomness or variability because the real world is messy, but the pattern of movement is recognizable.
Right.
Now, to get between these modes, say to climb over a rock when you're walking, you have to destabilize your current movement in a controlled way. Push over an energy barrier to adopt the new mode.
So it's like a planned instability almost.
In a sense, yes, a controlled change. And the really cool part is using physics models, researchers can now predict which actions will make a certain mode more or less likely.
Really? They can predict how to switch modes.
Yeah, and how likely a transition is depending on the obstacle, its size, its friction angle, all that. And they've tested this experimentally. It's not just theory.
That seems incredibly powerful for designing robots.
It is, because you can start designing robots knowing how they'll likely interact with obstacles instead of just trial and error. You can even estimate the energy cost of getting over something.
Wow. So has this led to actual robots yet?
Yes. The paper mentions a proof of concept, a multimodal robot that can combine different body shapes and leg actions.
Uh-huh.
And even with a human helping it choose when to switch modes, it could cross obstacles like Martian rocks and even flip itself back over if it fell. Things wheeled rovers definitely struggle with.
That's huge. So the next step is making it autonomous. How do you get it to make those decisions itself?
That's the roadmap they outline. First, use the physics models to make high-level plans based on terrain maps, maybe from orbit initially, then updated by the robot's own sensors.
See the terrain, plan the mode.
Right. But vision isn't enough. You need sensors that feel the ground force sensors on the legs and body.
Ah, like touch.
Exactly. To feel unexpected slips or soft spots. They mention having a proof of concept for that kind of sensing, too.
Okay, sensing, planning. What about actually doing the tricky moves?
That's where reinforcement learning comes in. combining it with the physics models. The physics gives the strategy, the learning helps refine the exact timing and force needed for smooth, reliable transitions between modes.
So physics tells it what to try. Learning figures out how to do it perfectly.
That's a good way to put it. And you'd measure success by directly comparing these legged robots to wheeled versions on the same tough terrain, who gets through, how fast, how much energy they use.
It sounds like a really integrated approach.
Yeah.
The paper contrasts this with relying only on deep learning, right?
It does. Deep learning has been great for, say, teaching robots stable walking on simpler ground, but it can be a bit of a black box.
Meaning we don't always know why it works.
Yeah, or if it will work in a situation it wasn't trained for. The physics-based approach gives you more insight, more predictability.
And maybe let smaller robots tackle bigger obstacles.
That's the idea, because it's not just about staying upright. It's about using those controlled instabilities, those transitions. Smaller robots also have the advantage of potentially not sinking as easily in sand.
Makes sense. And they stress doing real experiments, not just simulations.
Oh, absolutely. Simulations are vital, but they can't capture everything. There's always a sim to reality gap.
Things work differently in the real, messy world.
Always. So you need real robots interacting with real terrain to validate the models and refine the control. It's this combination of physics insights and learning tested experimentally that's needed for robust, multimodal locomotion.
Okay, that covers legs. But the paper also talked about snakes.
Hmm.
Limbless robots.
Right. Which sounds maybe counterintuitive, but snakes are also amazing navigators of complex spaces.
How does it work for robots? Stability seems like it would be hard without legs.
It is, especially on big obstacles where there's nothing to push against easily. But research shows real snakes do clever things. They switch gaits.
Gaits, like walking versus running.
For a snake, yeah. They use that classic side-to-side S-shape lateral undulation for pushing forward and staying stable on flatter ground.
Okay.
But when they hit a big step or gap, they can switch to using vertical bending, arching their body up or down to bridge the obstacle.
Wow, they lift themselves.
Effectively, yes. Mm-hmm. And snake robots using this kind of adaptive gait are much better, faster, and more reliable at crossing large obstacles than robots that only move side to side.
And didn't they find vertical bending could also push them forward?
Yeah, that was another interesting discovery. It's not just for bridging. It can actually generate propulsion, too, for both snakes and robots.
So they combine the sideways and up and down movements.
Exactly. Real snakes coordinate these beautifully to flow over uneven ground with lots of obstacles, hardly slipping at all. It's very sophisticated.
So for snake robots, the next step is sensing.
You got it. Figuring out how to use sensors, probably touch sensors along the body to control that 3D bending automatically. Animal studies suggest snakes use sensory feedback constantly to modulate their shape.
Feel the terrain, adjust the body bend.
Precisely. And to study this, they've actually built a snake robot that can bend in 3D and has a compliant skin with force sensors all over it.
So they can measure exactly how it's interacting with obstacles as it moves.
Exactly. It all feeds back into understanding the fundamental physics, the pterodynamics, as they call it, of how locomotion works on complex terrain.
It really feels like we're moving beyond just brute force engineering.
I think so. It's about understanding the interaction between the mover and the environment at a deeper level, drawing inspiration from biology and using physics and learning together.
So wrapping this up, the big takeaway seems to be wheeled rovers, amazing as they are, have hit some real barriers, literally, on Mars and potentially other worlds.
Yeah, the really interesting, challenging terrain often stops them.
But these new bio-inspired robots, legged ones, snake-like ones, using smart physics-based movement strategies. They offer a credible path forward.
They really do. They promise access to places we currently can't reach by understanding and exploiting the physics of movement in ways wheels just can't.
This isn't just for space, is it? This kind of research has applications here on Earth, too.
Oh, definitely. Search and rescue in rubble, environmental monitoring in really rough terrain, anywhere you need robots to navigate unpredictable, complex environments. This fundamental research is broadly applicable.
And with space access getting cheaper, maybe we'll see these kinds of alternative robots actually flying sooner rather than later.
The opportunities for testing and deployment are certainly increasing. It's an exciting time for planetary robotics.
It really makes you think. Maybe the key to unlocking the secrets of other worlds isn't just bigger rockets or more powerful wheels. Maybe it's about understanding movement itself, drawing lessons from life that's already mastered complex terrain.
A kind of mechanical biomimicry driven by physics?
Yeah. What kind of discoveries are waiting out there? in those places currently just beyond our reach. Something to ponder. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.